the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with this week's news, views and opinions from the world of Non-League Football. Keeping me company this week via the power of the internet and adding some northern insight is Joe Stalwart, Mr. FC United, Swampy. Good evening, Swampy.
Good evening, Tim, and good evening, listeners.
We missed you last week. Are you feeling better?
From the jet lag or from the illness? As a football club, been all the way up to the northeast of England, to Blyth in Northumberland.
Well, we'll talk about the northeast in a minute. Yeah. But yeah, it's a long way.
It is, yeah. And then on Tuesday, we were in Kidderminster. And for semi-pro footballers to have two very, very long distance games, it don't have to take it out of you. I was ill, as you know, last week. That's why I wasn't on the show, and I couldn't make Blyth, but I crawled out of my deathbed to go to Kidderminster, and it was a game too soon. So I'm back tucked up in bed waiting for this bug to disappear, but hopefully something medicinal this evening is going to help me.
But turning out for us nonetheless.
Of course, yes.
Like the man named on the subs bench, even though he knows he hasn't got his boots, but he's there. There were lots of games off again last weekend because of the weather, and luckily the game that I went to on Saturday at Arlesley Town against my boys, Hayes and Yedding United, was on, and that was thanks, no doubt, very hard work by the ground staff there. All the surface water was removed by effectively a massive sponge on a roller, which worked wonders with a fair bit of sweat too that went with it. But I'm told they cost nearly £1,000, and replacement sponges are £150 each. Even for clubs at step four like Arlesey, you know, it's a massive outlay. So, but perhaps whilst we enjoy those electronic subs boards, you know, league sponsors and the FA could look at a way of maybe funding or subsidising tools like these, the clubs, you know, we'll get more games played, you know, it'll be better for the fans, certainly travelling fans, you know, to get to a ground and the game's been called off. But that said, I'm not sure if Arlesey may prefer the game not to have been on, given our record-breaking 9-1 win at the final whistle. But they were very gracious and a great club with great people running it there. I mean, Swampy, you're a man of ideas. This sponge on a roller seemed a great idea for clubs. But yeah, what else do you think should be subsidised or better still handed out to every non-league club? Yeah, how can we make our game run better at this level?
Well, it's a great question, and it's a question that we've discussed on this show on many occasions. And I mean, prior to coming on, I had a quick look at how many teams are within the non-league pyramid. If you discount initially step seven, which is the level to go into, so say levels step six, 43 leagues in from step six all the way up, which is around, let's say, 22 teams, works out about what, let's say, £946 million if we gave each team £1 million. And for that, I think what you would get is you'd get, and let's not forget, you know, TV money's worth billions and billions of pounds nowadays. If we could give all these clubs money, we'd have better players, more homegrown players, perhaps better talent, better prospects for the national teams. League clubs could allow perhaps step 10 and below to use their facilities. You've also then got, you know, once you're in step six, maybe an FA contract, a contract for all clubs that sign, and that money can be spent on clubhouses, pitches, facilities, training pitches, all grounds. We have this word, don't we? All grounds must meet a minimum requirement. Well, why don't we just forget about the minimum requirement? Let's make all grounds really
well-graded.
Well,
it's like these retail parks that pop up, don't they? You know, the fast food outlets, they turn up, they're two separate bits, they join them together, they come on the back of on two separate low loaders, join them together, they're open. You know, the buying power of non-league as a whole, if you could get that operating as a clubhouse or an additional little function room, imagine how much easier to run a non-league football club it would be.
Well, I just think that the money is there. You know, there's a huge amount of money within sport, within the advertising, within television revenue from the FA. And if we could get all clubs on a level playing field where they've got great facilities, simple things like, you know, covers, a good quality pitch, it will enhance the game massively. And, you know, I'm going to use a saying that probably people have heard quite a lot, but I mean, I think it's certainly in the non-league pyramid, because it's not for the few, it's about the many, isn't it? And we should be basically concentrating with so many teams within the non-league arena. We should make sure that the quality is there. I go to Europe quite a lot, and I go to a local village, let's say in Italy, they've got football ground, with floodlights. They've got nice seating facilities and standing. Next to it, there's a tennis court. There's also a basketball court. It's part of the community. If the money that we have in this country within football themselves can be passed down and it's all accounted for, you can't spend it on wages, you get all your basics right, so every football club has all the basics right, they're working within the community and all those things that they do already, they keep on doing it, and that £1 million that they get, I mean, that's a hypothetical number, the £1 million, but you make sure that, like, as you said, the game on Saturday, sponge rollers, £1,000. Well, if you've got covers and you've got the facilities, you're not going to need them sponge rollers. You're going to be able to utilise something that's not going to cost you again and again and again. And I think we've got a massive fundamental rethink. We can't have billions and billions of pounds swirling around in one part of football and expecting to take the best bits of our game, which they do. You know, the players end up going into the Premier League and into the Football League. We've got to make sure that we are looked after and it's an even playing field for everybody. Budgets and all the rest of it, I wouldn't use the money for, because that's down to individual clubs, because some clubs have bigger revenues. But I'd give everyone the same amount, and then every so often we reinvest and we have the best surfaces, the best pitches, the best players, and you never know, it might even help England or Scotland, Wales or even Ireland win a World Cup with the quality that we invest in our non-league game.
And that moves very nicely onto the next part of the news that I was going to talk about, which is, we'd all love a money tree, or at least the ability to regrow some money or double or quits or something like that. But certainly, we mentioned a couple of weeks back at Truro City that they survived the precipice, you know, almost going into administration. They thrived under the current owners, but then at least one of those is going to be stepping aside come the end of the season after the five-year plan's been completed. So they're looking for a new owner or co-owner. And then this week, we see that their long-term plan, which was to move to this thing called the Stadium for Cornwall to try and create a big community hub to serve the whole of Cornwall, £10 million ground that was going to be shared with the Cornish Pirates rugby team and also Truro and Penwith College. It's hit a snag because the original plan, I think, was some development land being sold off, and then that funding was going to help with the neighbouring retail development that was going to happen there has now been postponed or is running behind schedule. So they're now something like £6 million short with both of those clubs essentially. You know, Truro are talking about maybe ground share for next year. But Cornish Pirates can't go up into the next level, into the Premier in rugby. So, you know, effectively, both of these clubs are looking for a ground to be ready at this Stadium for Cornwall, which they're now £6 million short of by August 2019. So, you know, just over a year and a half away. And they're looking for public sector investment. And that's maybe not the greatest timing at the moment, the current economic climate. But, I mean, it for somewhere like that, it probably is an essential community facility. And is that maybe where football could help from the higher echelons and get involved?
Tim, you're exactly right. I mean, Cornwall is, we were talking, weren't we, a couple of weeks on the show about the Yorkshire International Football Association coming into being because, you know, they've got an identity, got a culture. Well, the Cornish, exactly the same. Government, local government, I can't be short-sighted in the fact that sport brings people together. It creates revenue. It increases house pricing ordinarily in and around where state they are, contrary to popular belief. And if you can get three teams in one playing at one, so like let's say a Cornish National Stadium, for want of a better word, you've got your rugby team now then going into the Premiership. You've got your football team who are doing particularly well and want to climb the higher echelons. All the revenue generated within that that arena is going back into the community and back into the clubs themselves. It's a no-brainer. So the £4 million, really, football could step in, certainly. Rugby union could come in and step in as well. You know, so and the college, you know, again, they can hopefully rely on both the RFU and the FA to come along and say, look, we appreciate what's happening. We know this is a viable proposition. The council have to be backing it as well. And central government has to back it. And this is where we need to be developing and making sure communities can thrive. Because if you lose the football club and if you lose the rugby club, these teams, these supporters and teams have got nothing else. You know, they have to go further and further afield to watch a team that isn't local to them, where they'd rather have it in their own backyard. And it's a shame, but you know, Truro, we know they've done very, very well to this point, and I'm sure they're certainly going to survive, and they get this new owner, the new person to come in and inject even more money into the football club. But we need to consider the RFU and the FA come together with the local council and say with government to make sure that this project works, because in 10 years' time, there'll be a huge benefit to the community, and financially, it'll be a massive benefit as well. Public money, I know at this moment in time, is a tough thing, but public money, it should be available if it's going to benefit a community.
And it's sad that our opening story is all about money, but you look at Chester, who've had a review of everything at their club, and CEO Mark Maguire is going to be made redundant as of April this year as the club pushed towards a volunteer-based model. And that's interesting because, obviously, a couple of weeks ago we heard from Natalie Atkinson about the impact that she had as a full-time employee working at Curzon Ashton. She's now moving on to Southport, trying to replicate the same. Last week we spoke to Worksop Town and how they've managed to turn things around. They've obviously got new owners in as well now, but they've got quite a core of some full-time employees, and I know it's a tough balance of books, and it's something that we're always discussing at my club. And I don't know Chester's specific situation there. They may be looking at if they get relegated this season, how they have to refocus and things like that, but sometimes as a business, as a club is yeah, whether we like it or not, that they need to sometimes make a gamble and put someone in charge that can oversee the strategy, really, and sort of get things going on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, you can. I mean, Chester is another ex-league club who went to the wall, have come back stronger, bigger and better. They're moving to a new ground quite a few seasons ago now, and that ground's on. It's one of those where it's not actually within the community, and so sometimes you've got to really, really be proactive in the community. And I know Chester are being a fan-owned club, part of Sports Direct, and we've had some good times down there with them. And it's cutting the cloth accordingly, I suppose. And volunteer-based fan-owned football is very different to the day-to-day running of many other football clubs. But the other thing as well, they're playing in a division where it's a national. They're in the National League. The cost implications there are huge. There is a debate to be had whether or not you split League Two into a North and South and make the conference the National League teams from the North into the Northern side, and then League Two Southern teams into the Southern side, and let the National League North and South ballot out to become which team goes into that division, because traveling is a huge expense. Probably one of the, after paying players' wages, it's probably the biggest expense a club will have. And if you're having to travel many, many, many miles and then having to make people redundant, there's something probably not quite right there. Yeah. And having to balance the books and getting rid of people because of that doesn't seem right to me, in fairness.
Well, yeah, we'll see if we can get some comment from Chester in the coming weeks. But let's move on to our first story of the week. So, as January reaches an end, divisions begin to take shape and the promotion word gets bandied about by fans, pundits and possibly those with more passion than sense. There's a long way to go until the season ends in most leagues, but clubs in positions at the top of their tables have to now begin to consider the full ramifications of what winning the title might entail, with ground grading deadlines fast looming and many more administrative considerations. This week, it was reported that a bid to the FA by the Northern League to add an extra step four division into the pyramid for them to oversee has been rejected. The argument for being that was whilst Northeast clubs appear to dominate at step five and step six in strength, shown in FA Cup runs and FA Vars success, the miles needed to be covered when they enter step four of the pyramid have ramifications that effectively threaten the very future of the clubs promoted. So no extra Northern step four division for now. So where does that leave clubs like Morpeth Town, recent FA Vars winners, top of their division and having sleepless nights over heart and reality? To explain a bit more, Morpeth Town chairman Ken Beattie joins us on the line. Good evening, Ken.
Good evening, Tim.
Now, I don't want to start by making you out to be a troublemaker. It's far from it. From my own contacts, I understand you to be what I call a real chairman. You know, someone with the club, the community in your heart. You're probably giving far more time, blood, sweat, tears, and money even than you probably can muster. You're a bit of a realist too, though. You know, you're closer to Scotland than probably most English cities. And would this extra division have made it easier when looking at promotion?
Well, yes. There's an extra division which will. Take in consideration the travel that teams from the Northern League have got to do. Yes, an Eastern League would be fine. And I would imagine going as far south as something like Harrogate, Scarborough. We're, just for you know the geography here, we're based about 41 miles from the Scottish border. You know, we're talking looking at the current league of the Eversticks, which is the league we would go in. The current rate of travelling would be around about 6,000 miles per season, if it was next season. But if they're going to look at a different setup, well, we're welcome to look at that. We've got to look at as a club what we've committed to spend on a five-year plan, what we've you know committed to money with the juniors. We've got 38 teams of juniors. We've got girls and boys teams. We're committed to try to bring them on board with the necessary pitches we've allocated to develop and a 3G pitch. And to put more pressure on ourselves is out of order, really. You know, if we're looking at something like an Eastern League, which I don't possibly believe they've got time to get in place for next season, then we're talking about a different kettle of fish. But the worry for me in Morpeth Town is the cost, the travel time, and putting at risk what we've planned over the last 5 years.
Yeah, and if anybody ever looks at these various maps of where clubs are located, plotted on the on a map of the UK. I love the one from the Northern League because it's like when ants, you know, sort of all join together. You are all sort of very tight. Yeah. So it would be a massive difference for you, wouldn't it?
It would be a massive difference. You know, the average travel time for us is about say 30 miles, 40 miles. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, from going from that to 6,000 miles a season, not taking into consideration cup competitions, is a huge step for us. And, you know, what my belief is that you've not only got the team travelling and the cost, you've got the fans, you've got the committees, and most of these clubs in our league, you know, are made up of people who are possibly ex-players, ex-committee guys who've give all their spare time to football and they've got passion. You kill that passion, you kill the clubs. We've seen it before, Pierre, in junior football, where you know there's no one to run clubs. We've only got two junior sides in the whole of Northumberland. Kill that passion, you haven't got anything.
Yeah, and it's very difficult to get you know even more out of the volunteers that are already giving you know pretty much most of their life there. Yeah, you know, looking at your current travel at the moment, you know, in your division, you've got Penrith. In your division, I mean, what's the away day like for just that game alone for you? That must be completely different from all others, anyway, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's different. We've got the two furthest teams are Penrith, which is about say, I don't know, 70 miles. You've then got Gisborough, which is about 60 miles, and that's the furthest. The rest are all congregated together, as you said. The away day for that is, you know, it's a one-off day. It's a good day away. We leave at about say 10 o'clock. Picking everyone up on the way, and you know, admittedly, it's a good day out. But if you get that, you know, each and every week, we're travelling to places like Trafford Clitheroe and teams like that. You're talking about leaving on a Saturday at say 9 o'clock and getting back at 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday. Never mind midweek games. And of course, we've got the added problem of guys working on shifts who possibly on a midweek game are getting back at 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning. Getting ready for an early start, and then you have people like teachers who can't get off work, so it just kills your whole makeup of the team.
I can. It's Swamp here from FC. Listen, I think it's so short-sighted of the FA. I've got a good affiliation with the North East. I often spend my time up there watching either South Shields or more than anything, Jarrah Roofing. And I know the passion. Of the people of the North East and their football. This is, as a football club, for you, put you in a position which is going to be very, very unsettling because I listened to your manager talking last week. Yep. I think, you know, you're flying away with the division at this moment in time. How do you get the players still focusing when, you know, it may well be automatic promotion opposed to considering it? Because I know he's happy to stay where he is. I mean, you know, football clubs of the North East It's very different to anywhere else with the travelling, as you say. So how is he? Yeah. How is he able to generate? How are you able to keep those players focused with knowing exactly what's all going on off the pitch?
Well, it's difficult because we don't know what we're doing next year. I mean, you know, you're saying it's mandatory. You know, obviously, I've got to look after the club first. And when we get the what the makeup of the league will be, when we know the distance, we'll have to inform the players. But as you say, it's difficult at the moment. Players are not sure. Some have got jobs where they simply can't travel. Some work on Saturday mornings, you know, a morning shift at work. All these things have got to be borne in mind. And the players, as you say, are quite unsettled right now. We don't know what we're doing. Clearly, there are teams in our league which maybe are a little bit further south than us. I mean, we travel to somewhere like Bishop Auckland. It's an hour down the road before we get there, although it's not the furthest travel. They've got an hour start on us, and then you have situations like traffic. Of course, you know, if it was a midweek game, for example. So we're going to have to be leaving very early for a midweek game. And I know the FA are trying to say, well, look, we'll keep midweek games to a minimum, but there will be some midweek games. The thing I've got to look at, one of the problems we've got, is that if you look, you know, we're criticised about only sending, say, three teams in the last few years, like Spennymoor, South Shields, and Darlington up from this league. But there's been far more than that. If you look historically, you look back, and you look at North Shields, who went and came back bankrupt and had lost their ground. You've got Bishop Auckland, who came back almost bankrupt. You've got Spennymoor United, who had a reform in the Spennymoor town. You've got Durham City. You've got Newcastle Blue Star, no longer in existence. You've got Wiltie Bay, who came back bankrupt. These are the things what the Northern League teams are afraid of. It's not just the three teams that have gone up there who come from large urban areas. It's these teams historically who have gone up and come back in one heck of a state, you know, and gone bankrupt.
And that's
the issue.
And I suppose that's there has been an argument, and it's been levelled at the Northern League for a number of years now, saying, well, perhaps with if you don't pay players as bigger wages as you are doing, therefore that money can be can used into actually for transportation and getting to grounds. But as you say there, the proof's in the pudding with six or seven clubs that have actually tried it and have come back or have gone to the wall. I mean, you've got club in the North West Counties currently in Carlisle City, which in reality is a similar journey but down the M6.
Yep.
And they're just, you know, sitting mid-table in the North West Counties. The other argument, I suppose, would be that the likes of Spennymoor are doing well this season and equally Blyth, but they're used to it now and they're further down. I mean, as you say, you're 41 miles from Scotland. Yeah. There's a big difference, isn't there? And the A1, M1, we know, is a treacherous road at the best of times. It's not environmentally friendly. It's not, at the same time, going to be beneficial for you as supporters. I mean, I came back from a game on Tuesday down at Kidderminster, 3 hours on the M6. I got back home at 2 o'clock. Some of our players were actually have to travel another hour after that to get to their homes, and they're up in the morning for work. This is semi-professional football. We've got to do what's best for supporters, players, and football clubs. Yep. And the FA have got to look at this again, haven't they?
That's exactly. And if you want to achieve what the FA have suggested, which is, you know, easier travelling, easier for fans, easier for players, then they're not achieving this by what they're suggesting to us. You know, if that's they should be looking very carefully. Although the Northern League proposal came in later, they should be looking very closely at Northern League proposal, which suggests that there should be three divisions in the Northern League. Level four would encompass, say, half the first division as it is now. That's fine. We accept that. But to discount it and say no, we're not accepting it, I think is not right. And I think they should look at it again. And that is the only feasible solution for us, as far as we're concerned.
And I guess you know, you mentioned all your youth team clubs and the stuff that I mentioned. You being community minded. You know, when your lads aren't getting back until beyond midnight as well, there's no incentive to become part of that community, is there really? Because you know they're just travelling migrants, really, wearing your kit.
Right. That's right. And what about the the Northern League encompasses Northumberland, Durham, Tyneway, and one club in Cumbria. But let's take Northumberland. Let's take southeast Northumberland. But North Northumberland teams up near Berwick. Can you imagine the trouble they would have? Now they're going to look at that and say, look, if we join this Northern League, small towns like Wooler up there in the north, if they join the Northern League, they're going to be in a position. Well, if promotion comes, it's mandatory. We'll be punished otherwise. What's the point when we can't afford it? So where is the encouragement for these teams to come on board when they know that could be the situation?
Yeah, so where are you then, you know, Ken, in your thoughts? Is it just you've got to wait until the end of the season and then decide?
Yep.
Have you put strategies in place? You know, if you're going up, you know, are you doing all these, you know, cost analysis type things that we always hear about?
We've done the cost analysis. We put a figure of £40,000 it'll cost the club if we take promotion. Because you've got to compensate a player if he takes a shift off work or can't work on a Saturday morning. We estimate between 15,000 and 18,000 for coaches and take into consideration cup games. So you put all that together and stopping for food on the way down if you're travelling long distance. You can't let these players not eat if you're doing, you know, long distance travelling. We put that together. We think about £40,000 it will cost us. We're waiting patiently. If they're going to put like an Eastern League together, how far is it going to go southerly, encompassing the East? I can't see where they're going to get the teams from to make it a northerly Eastern League. So, you know, these are major considerations. We're waiting with bated breath what they're going to come back with this new league.
And obviously the league have been dealing with the FA. Have the FA come to you and sort of sought any insight from you, had a conversation?
No. There has been meetings just where they've been explaining generally, but it wasn't a meeting where they're talking. Yeah, I think they should be talking to the teams who look probable to finish in the top two or four positions and then talk to them. No one's talked to us. So we should be, you know, telling them our position and them talking to us and explaining the problems we have, particularly the most northern league teams. Most of these clubs, the problem you've got is, if you look at the clubs that's gone up, South Shields, Spennymoor got a very... progressive type of chairman who's raising money through his business contacts. South Shields the same. The reality of it is that most clubs in our area in Northumberland are run by four or five guys who are mainly in their 60s and 70s who just cannot be stressed anymore. They're raising as much money as they can to run clubs. And it's a fallacy to think all this money that the Northern League's paying out of place. There's some getting more expensive than others, admittedly, but most clubs aren't getting carried away with extra costs. And at the end of the day, you're putting more stress on these people who are, as I say, trying their best right now to raise money. And to me, you'll kill football team up here if they can't. Let's say that's a small club who are paying expenses of £20 a week to cover people's mileage and this sort of thing. How are they going to get these guys to take time off work and travel down to the Yorkshire and the Manchester area? It's totally impractical.
Everything you've said, I don't think. If someone from the FA is listening to this evening, it'd be really interesting if they come on next week and just go through point by point the reasons what you've stated aren't the reasons why we should have a step forward in the northeast of England. Because as you rightly say, it will kill the game. It will kill the game of the northeast, and we know the passion of the northeast. We know the footballers are the brewing. I mean, the other option, I mean, and again, it's an option that you wouldn't want is maybe, you know, from where you are, is maybe moving to the Scottish side of lowland football. But again, you're an English team. You want to play in the English pyramid. You want to do as best as you can. And there just seems to be no thought process whatsoever. And whatever thought process that they've put in place is nonsense. Because as you say, I've been to so many grounds around the northeast, and it is run by, as you rightly say, 60, 70-year-old people, young volunteers coming in helping, the lifeblood of the community, the clubs in and around. They're not gonna travel away from home. You're not gonna be able to keep the same players that you wanted to do so. And even if those clubs do take that risk, and as you said, seven have done so, and they've all come back. Some have done okay, and they've reformed again. But it's not the way it should be. You should be on a situation where the division should be strong, and it should be helping the national game going forward.
Exactly, I totally agree.
Well, really appreciate your time, Ken, and your insights as well. And we wish you well for the rest of the season. We'll try and get some word from the FA and try and get to some sort of a resolution, because it's for the better of football. We're constantly saying about the northeast being the hotbed of football, but as you say, if you knock the passion out of people, and the whole game's going to suffer, isn't it? Thank you again for your time, and wish you well for the rest of the season, and speak to you soon.
Thanks very much indeed. Thank you.
So, now, I mentioned earlier, it's possibly a bit early to be talking promotion just yet. Well, it's still January, Well, actually, it isn't. Well, it's still January, but it's not too early to talk about promotion or even to be cracking open the champagne, as our next guest can probably testify. Last weekend, in the Essex and Suffolk Border League Division 3, that's step 10 in the pyramid, promotion was clinched by Colne Athletic FC. And to tell us more, here's manager Ben Connell. Ben, good evening.
How are we doing?
Well, some people have only just, they're still getting over Christmas, and you guys are already celebrating probably that post-season break, aren't you?
It's certainly been a good year. As I said, we worked hard in pre-season, and to do it this early is great. It's great, to say the least. Unexpected.
So tell us about Colne. Effectively, you're a new club set up by a group of mates, and you just seem to be enjoying it. Is that it?
That's exactly it. Yeah, I mean, we've all, as I say, we're a group of friends that either went to school or college together, and we're all playing for separate. Some of us are playing together, and some are playing for sort of separate local clubs, and you know, lots of Withenhoe Town and Clacton and Stanway Rovers. And then, to be honest, the big sort of stumbling block was the travelling. A lot of us have sort of had enough of the travelling, and I think a couple might have been getting it in the ear from their missus when they've got young families. So a couple of the lads were talking about jacking it in, and we sort of got the idea of, well, why don't we start our own team? It'll be local, and we'll give it a go and try and run a football club the way we think it should do. And thus far, it's going okay. Good.
And how's that? We've just been speaking to Ken, the chairman at Morpeth, that, you know, various bits of red tape decisions and what. How's that been, sort of running your own club and hitting your head against the wall?
Yeah, it's been good. Obviously, it's been a learning process. I've had a lot of help from the league, and we're lucky enough to get a few good sponsors behind us at the start of the season. There was AS Cleaning, Smart Insulations, and Cherry Kitchen Makeovers. They sort of give us a bit of backing to get us going. And as I say, with a lot of sort of help and guidance at the moment, we're running the club quite efficiently. My dad's the chairman, Neil, and my assistant manager, Scott, his parents, Stuart and Linda, they sort of help running the club secretary and treasurer. So, yeah, at the moment, it's going pretty well, and we're all pulling in the same direction. So it's working to plan at the moment.
Swampy question.
Yeah, I mean, I had a quick look on your Twitter feed earlier on, and first and foremost, congratulations, you know, to win the league so early in the season must be entertaining. I mean, obviously, you've come into the division. Were the expectations to just enjoy the football, and then before you knew it, you started getting a little bit serious, and now you're champions, you're thinking, oh, where do we go from here? Or was it really, let's come in, we've got some players that have played at a decent standard, and we can win this division, and we can maybe set up a club and move forward, going to get on together?
Yeah, that's it, really. I mean, it's sort of both sides of the coin, I guess. I mean, we all wanted to make sure we was enjoying our football. That was obviously the main thing. But when we started getting, you know, the group of lads that we had together, it was sort of, hold on, we should be able to do something good here. So, you know, we worked our pre-season. We obviously didn't know how it was going to go, but we put a good shift in. And as I say, it's gone really well. We're just sort of taking it game by game and kept winning games, and luckily enough. But yeah, if we win on Saturday, we get the title, win the title, and I think that makes us 18-1. So that'll be great. But as I say, we'll just take it season by season. But that's it. Hopefully, we keep progressing, because, you know, we want to play the sort of best day that we can, I guess, to the limits of how far the club can go. But yeah, we're enjoying it, though. That is the main thing. We are enjoying our football, which a lot of the lads hadn't done for a while. So that is the main goal, I guess.
Well, I mean, Ali Pally over Christmas and a 13-2 win the following day can't be bad. And I've noticed you've also even got your own beer. You know, you've been imported from the Czech Republic. You've got a brown lager.
The social side of it certainly is a big part of it. But as I say, we was all having a beer together most Saturday nights anyway, so we thought we might as well meet up a bit earlier and play football first. So that was sort of the how it all started, I guess. But no, the social side of it certainly is a big part of it. But we do work hard as well, so hopefully next. The plan is we're hoping that the league are going to maybe bump us up a couple of leagues instead of one, possibly. And then obviously it'll be a test for us to see whether we're, you know, we can give a good account of ourselves a couple of leagues up and you know, whether we can carry on winning games or, you know, and push ourselves. That's the plan, because there's some good teams in those leagues. So hopefully we can, you know, give them a run for their money.
And you said, you know, 17 straight wins already this season out of 17. You've only got 5 games to go. So when does your season finish?
Yeah, I know. It's quite ridiculous, really. I mean, unfortunately, what they do is we've got we're in one more cup. The biggest disappointment of the season is that we did lose in the cup. And it was a cup we wanted to win, so that really was a disappointment. To Buers, we had a lot of lads missing, but that's no excuse. They sort of beat us on penalties, so it's a fair play to them. So that was annoying because there's not a massive amount of games, so we did want to win that. So we're in one more cup. We're away at Hatfield Peveril in a few weeks' time. So hopefully we can have a decent run in that cup, and that's got all of the, you know, that's the cup that's got all of the teams from all four of the divisions. So if we can have a good run in that, that'll be great, really. But yeah, so the season hasn't got that many games left, which is annoying because you know, we're sort of getting into the, as you say, you feel like you're getting into the swing of things, and Christmas just goes, and then all of a sudden it could be comes a bit of an abrupt end, which would be a shame. But it's been good fun, that's for sure.
So all this success and fame, though, does that mean you're getting, you know, maybe have you had any job offers from elsewhere, or as a manager, or have you got lots of players now wanting to come and join? You know, could that upset the friend basis that you've got going on there? It's you know, it's tough at the top. It's going to become more difficult for you now, isn't it?
as I say, there's a big group of lads that are playing together. We are all friends, and we've all played together for years. So, I mean, at the moment, we've got, you know, we've got our night out on Saturday to celebrate promotion. I think there's about 26 of us. So at the moment, there's a couple of lads that have joined on a bit late that are, again, friends of ours from football. And at the moment, we're fine. We're fine for players. we got enough. And hopefully the players that we've got can do well for us, you know, in the higher divisions. That'll be the plan, to try and keep the core together. And if I can add one or two with a bit more quality, then as we have done, then we will. But at the moment, I'm very, very happy with the squad that we've got. We've got a real good bunch of lads that are all getting really well, and some really good players that obviously could be playing a lot higher. But as I say, they're playing with a smile on their face, which is the good thing.
Start taking advantage of the dual registration system as well. You know, bring a few in as the season draws to a close.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We've got a couple on those bases, and they've ended up staying with us and haven't gone back to their clubs where they were sort of the start of the season. So, yeah, as I say, hopefully we're also doing something right, because the lads seem to be enjoying it. And as I say, we've got a good squad together, a good team bond, and good togetherness. So it's a fun place to be at the moment, which is good.
Well, it sounds good as well.
Well, sorry, just a very quick one. I thought there, pre-season friendly, I've got one sorted for you already. Because in the northwest of England, there's a team in the northwest counties division called Colne.
Right, there we go.
So you've got to play against them. It's in Lancashire, and they're in the northwest counties. So you,
The lads will definitely be up for a weekend away somewhere.
I think it needs to be an international 3-team tournament, doesn't it? Isn't Cologne in Germany? Isn't that Cologne as well?
Suffolk to Lancashire.
I reckon the lads might get away with going up to Lancashire for a game, but I don't know about away in Germany. I think the missus might block that one, but we can always try.
Now we're talking to a non-league footballer later who's making a documentary of his life. So have you thought about the film rights of this story as well? You know, like, I'm thinking Peter's friend. You know, you probably look far more friendlier on the eye than the full Monty as well. You know, like,
there'll be a couple of laughs in the film. I assure you that there'll be a couple of laughs. Some of the things that go on, which I certainly can't say, but no, that would be a good laugh.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got the merchandising all behind you as well. You know, sort of global media this week. You know, I can see a YouTube channel at least coming on.
I did think it was a wind-up when you got in contact this morning, to be honest. But
made me feel better having seen you all plastered all over the media before I got to you as well.
No, it's nice, you know, that what we set out to do and to have the enjoyment factor, but to play good football and to win games, and it's nice that, you know, we get a bit of recognition. It is nice. You know, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't, but yeah, it's good.
But it's also nice to hear about footballers enjoying football at this level.
That's the main thing, isn't it? Because you end up, you know, and there's loads of players that will tell you, especially, you know, non-league players that will say that they're just playing to maybe pick up a few quid of a weekend, or playing because that's all they have to. And, you know, the lads that are signed on for us have gone from maybe, you know, picking up a bit of money on a Saturday to paying to play. So that's a sort of change of mentality. So they're all there because they want to be there, and they want to be involved, and we're all mates, and the good togetherness that's there, that's why they're there. And that's why, you know, we've got a good team bond, which is apparent from anyone to see from watching or being involved in the club. Everyone, you know, everyone loves it, to be honest. It's good. It's really good.
Well, it's a great story, and it's been great talking to you, Ben. And we'll look out for maybe we won't look out on Twitter over the weekend because of that celebratory part. 26 lads going out.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to look on the Twitter account.
I'd take their phones off them if I were you.
I'd
turn
the Twitter account off.
Yeah, all the phones in a box before we go out.
Right, best of luck at the weekend for the rest of the season.
Yeah,
and speak
thank you very
soon.
Much. Have a lovely evening, chaps.
Cheers, Ben.
Good luck.
Take care.
Well done.
So it's not every day that documentaries get made about non-league football, let alone individual non-league footballers. But then it's not every day footballers give up everything, family, homeland, almost all their possessions, to pursue their dream to play football in England. One man did, and is still enjoying the passion of playing in non-league football, as well as fundraising for the documentary on his life. Good evening, Sergio Torres.
Hello, good evening. Thank you for the call.
Well, I want to spare your blushes, but that's a pretty fair intro, isn't it? You know, you pretty much gave everything up to come over here and play football.
Yeah, that was exactly it. I was 22 years old when I made that decision. I tried in Argentina, my luck, a few clubs, professional, but it wasn't meant to be. I went to a few trials, but I was playing just for fun in my local team and working for my dad in the brick factory. And I always said to my dad, "Oh, my dream would be to play professional and live from, you know, do what I love every day." So I said to him, I want to try my luck in Europe, because here in Argentina, if you're 20, 21 and you make it, it's very hard to make it. So, yeah, that's why I decided to leave everything. I didn't even speak English. So it was really hard at the beginning, but it was the best decision I made.
And then you come over here, have a trial at a pro club, doesn't quite work out, then you fall into non-league. Were you aware of what non-league football was about before you came to this country?
No, not really, to be fair. I came on trial to Brighton, actually, and they were in League One at the time. And I just, they were, in League One, and I was amazed by the standard, by the professional, and because third division in Argentina, I was thinking, I was comparing it, so it was nothing like this. And it blew me away, and, you know, the training facilities and everything. So I was like, even more, I wanted to stay. And then, it couldn't happen professional, so I have to start mostly, which they were Ryman Prem, I believe, at the time. And then I was there for 2 months, and then I went to Basingstoke Town, where I played a year and a half. And I absolutely loved it. Since the first game, I think I got man of the match in my first game, and I don't know, it was about 500 fans. They were brilliant. And I fell in love with English football, and 14 years later, I'm still playing non-league now.
And most people probably remember that those curly locks of yours, you know, when you turned out for Crawley Town, particularly that FA Cup game at Old Trafford, and then you got promoted that year as well into the Football League. I mean, was that your favourite memory as a player?
Oh, I got a few amazing memories, but definitely, my time at Crawley was very, very special. I joined in the conference, and then we won that league, and then got to fifth round of the FA Cup, which was a dream come true for any non-league player. Just being a, you know, it's once in a lifetime, and it was just a crazy, and you cannot explain with words that the feeling standing on that tunnel, and was so many things going through my head that when I came, but I had to go through so many rejections, so many people say you're not good enough, but I just kept believing. And another day in my career that I remember was the day I signed my first professional contract, which I always thank John Gorman for giving me that chance. You know, you need to work hard, you need to believe in yourself, but you also need a bit of luck. And and someone there that believes in you and then, you know, give you that chance. And that was John for me. And, you know, I'm still in touch with John, and he's probably the best manager I had. So, yeah, that's a special memory. And I also had the pleasure to play at Stamford Bridge when I was at Wycombe Wanderers in the Carling Cup, which again, it was a dream come true playing against, I don't know, Shevchenko, Drogba, Lampard, Ballack. It was just amazing. So what football gave me in this few years in this country is just amazing. And the non-league, I absolutely, the non-league, every player, every team, they're so honest. And yeah, everyone is just pure passion.
And we had the autobiography a few years back, but now there's a documentary. I mean, what's all this about? How did it come about?
I know, yeah. After I released my book, The Sergio Torres Story, I had a lot of people telling me that, so many great feedbacks, and quite a few people were asking me, is it going to make into a movie? Is it going to be a documentary? And I always joke about it. I was like, I'd love to do it, but, you know, I can't do it myself. So yes, a lot of people compare it to the movie Goal, which that Mexican guy coming to England play for Newcastle. When I watched that movie, I was thinking, oh my God, that's very similar to what happened to me when I first came to England, like the training sessions and getting smashed and in the rain. And so yeah, this guy called Jasper from Holland, he contacted me in December with my story as well, and his dream is to make a documentary. So I had a quick think of, yeah, we decided to do it. But you know, he's 22. I'm playing non-league. I got two jobs, family more. So we couldn't afford the lives to do it ourselves. So he advised to do it through a crowdfunding website, which is Kickstarter. And in 30 days, basically we looking to get 8,000. For the tickets to go to Argentina, visit all the places where I first played, and then here in England traveling, and we're going to Old Trafford hopefully, and I don't know, travel to meet the managers I used to play for and do interviews. So yeah, we got 11 days left now, and yeah, we about £2,600. We need that. So yeah, we're not too far, and we absolutely over the moon. How many people already help us, and I cannot thank them enough. You know, I think it's gonna be, I always say, I think it's gonna be good for kids who get released by clubs and they don't know what to do. And you know, I became professional at 24, which is late for football, but I never stopped dreaming. And I know there's kids out there that when you get released, they just stop playing because it's hard. If you love it enough, you can make it.
And for those that don't know Kickstarter, I mean, people pledge some money and they get a reward back, don't they? So they might get a shout out on social media, or you know, depending on how much they invest into the project, and you know, they could even get their name as a sponsor, maybe, or even producer limited edition signed DVDs. If you go to Kickstarter.com and search for the I think probably if you just search for Torres, T-O-R-R-E-S, I'm sure you'll find it.
But the unknown Torres.
The unknown Torres, a documentary is the full title. And search for that on Kickstarter.com, and you can see a bit more about Sergio's story and how you can get involved in the project. And I get involved in a number of Kickstarter projects, and this is certainly one that's well worth considering, particularly if you're a big non-league fan. So, it looks like, you know, hopefully you're going to raise this funding, you'll make the documentary, and then what about, yeah, Hollywood has this sort of reputation at the moment of taking old successful things and then turn them into sort of blockbusters. Yeah, you know, what if Hollywood got hold of your story? I mean, who would play the inimitable Sergio Torres?
No, I would play it myself. Oh, no, Hollywood being get in touch. I would play it myself. But to be fair, we just want to do it and see what happens after. We cannot wait to get started, and then just to you know, to have some ideas, and it's gonna be, well, for me it's gonna be amazing, and hopefully we'll be able to do it, and then we will see if maybe Channel 4 or someone will be interested in putting it out there so people can see my my story.
Yeah, well, it's not the end of the story, though, is it? Because you're still keeping those legs going down at Eastbourne Borough. Are they still willing? These legs, are they still going?
Yeah, I absolutely love football. I had the chance to be a manager I've been offered to be a manager in the summer, and then I had to turn it down because I'm still loving playing and I feel fit. I just absolutely love the feeling of the Saturday and going to training, and I don't want to lose it. I know in a few years' time, probably I will regret if I stop playing. And I'm feeling great. Sometimes after the games, it takes a little bit longer than when I was 20, but I'm still running around a lot, and yeah, I absolutely love it.
So would coaching, managing, would that be maybe a future step, or does maybe the media beckon instead?
Well, to be fair, yeah, I've done my badges. I got a UFRB. I've been coaching for nearly 2 years now with my friend Russell Martin. He opened up he just signed for Rangers. He opened up an academy. He's from here, from Brighton. And then I've been coaching kids from 7 years old to all the way to 19. So I got involved in coaching, and yeah, I absolutely loved it. So, managing, I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm ready for that stress. But yeah, who knows? Maybe in a few years. But I'm absolutely loving like working with kids every day. So I just want to stay in football. If it's not playing, I will stay involved as a coach, as a something to do with football.
Well, really, really grateful for you talking to us, Sergio, giving us some time. Good luck with the whole project and the rest of the career as well. And hopefully we'll speak to you again soon.
No, I really appreciate your call and your help. And yeah, hopefully in a few months' time you'll be able to see it on the TV or somewhere.
Yeah, so that's Kickstarter.com and The Unknown Torres, a documentary. Grumpy again. Time's got the better of us. We need to do this as a day-long live stream or something like that. Or well, maybe not. You're in bed.
To be honest, I do hold an old records commentary as well. Myself and Ben Hughes, who did that 24-hour commentary for a charity a few years ago. So we can talk all day and all night about football. It's the beautiful thing about it. There's always an opinion to be had. There's always someone got a contrary opinion to you. And that's what makes it such a beautiful game. And we've heard of stories tonight of people that have had, there's trials and tribulations. Some are celebrating promotion, some are dreading promotion because of what it's going to mean. You know, you've got ex-players that are making all the way from Argentina, documentaries and autobiographies. You know, it's a beautiful game, and we'll always be able to talk about it, which is a great thing.
There's more real stories at this level than the game than there is in that thing called the Premier or whatever they call it. I don't know.
Without a shadow of a doubt, it's something that's week in, week out. And the thing is, we're part and parcel of it, aren't we? We're not on the outskirts of it. We're actually embedded in it. And that's what non-league football is about, being embedded in your local community club and enjoying everything week in, week out.
Well, that was exactly my sales pitch to somebody who asked me why I was involved in non-league football this week. And
fantastic.
Several minutes later, I think they got it. Well, thank you, Swampy. Thanks to all our guests, and of course,
you
for listening. Don't forget, you can find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio. And if you want to put the podcast on your own website, check out www.nonleaguefootballshow.com, where you can grab an embeddable player for free. Thank you and goodbye.
JABBA.